crap, it's South By.
It's South By.
And we are actually here, despite the fact that we've been kind of AWOL the last couple days, because funny story about South By, lots of movies, lots of booze.
A little bit of booze.
So much booze.
Wait, were there movies?
We saw some movies.
We did,
yeah.
Was there booze during the movie?
We saw, yeah, there were a couple of times.
Were there boobs in the movies?
In some of them, yes.
Okay.
In fact, in two out of the three movies we saw, there were boobs. Yeah, so.
Visual summary, yeah.
That's true.
We're doing good so far.
I think so.
Boobs to booze rating.
Yeah.
That's almost a perfect 10.
Yeah. And I'm doing an experiment this year to see how long I can go into South By without paying for drinks or food.
Yes.
So. Oh, you want to know the tally? All right.
Have you gone hungry?
No, not at all. The tally so far is 13 beers, 8 mixed drinks, and 3 free meals.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're not counting meals, I take it.
What?
You're counting meals, too?
Counting meals, like meals that I got for free in some capacity or another. Which is the important part of South By, is really scavenging for free stuff like a hyena.
This year, more than any year before, there's just free food everywhere.
Everywhere.
I mean, it's ridiculous. You literally don't need to spend a penny. Like we, Casey Whalen.
Casey Whalen!
We went out to eat today at a barbecue joint, only to get like park downtown and see like right there where we're like entering park. There's free barbecue right there.
Yeah.
Like, God damn it! Right next to that was free grilled cheese sandwiches.
Yeah.
And now we're at a party with those I don't even know what free stuff.
There's sliders. There's corn dogs. So much. Like it's funny. This is a county fair party, so there's like circus peanuts and popcorn balls as well. So.
Deep fried everything.
Yeah, pretty much everything's deep fried. There's deep fried shrimp, which is really good. So maybe we should
become less full for that.
Maybe we should talk about the movies we saw.
Yeah, what did we see, Brian?
We saw Final Girls.
We did. We saw the Final
Girls. The Final Girls, yes, which is a horror comedy that pokes fun at specifically the Friday the 13th franchise. So you know it had a special place in my heart. But it's a movie basically where Malin Ackerman plays an actress who, when she was younger, was a bit of a scream queen and appeared in, what was the name of the movie? Camp Bloodbath.
Yeah.
Camp Bloodbath was the name of the franchise she starred in. And so she's now trying to make it as a serious actress, having some issues. And I don't want to give too much away, so I'll just say that it kind of escalates from there into a very meta horror comedy.
Right. I mean, I think the trailers very clearly show the premise past there.
You think? Okay. I haven't seen the trailer, so I don't.
Ultimately, that this group of people, one of which is the daughter of the actress, Malin Ackerman,
right,
was, but the character split in the movie, we see her die very early in the film in a car accident.
Yes.
Some years later, she gets kind of talked into, tricked into going to a film festival for these films.
Yes.
And through a series of, don't worry about it,
a series of last action hero film tropes.
Yep. End up trapped in the movie itself.
Yes.
Having to deal with, you know, she's dealing with her own dead mom who thinks she's this character.
Right.
And so from there we explore in a very sort of somewhere between Cabin in the Woods and Tucker and Dale Must Die.
Yeah. Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Mm-hmm.
Tucker and Dale Must Die should be the sequel though.
You're right. Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Tucker and Dale Must Die would be a great name for this. John Tucker Must Die?
Yeah, but
Tucker Must Die. Okay, I get it. See, I can trace your backwards logic.
Tucker. Just combine them at the Tucker. Thing.
Right? Yeah. Tuck, yeah.
They make a car that was the best car on the market, and they got shut down by the big companies and eventually killed.
Yes. Wait, what? I'm confused.
It's a movie called Tucker.
Oh, okay. Very well. No, I really genuinely liked this movie. It's one of those things where you can see that the guy making it hasn't done many features. In fact, I think they said this was his first feature. He's done a lot of shorts for South By before. There's a few. It's rough around the edges a little bit, but overall, it's very clever. It's a lot of fun, and I found myself laughing and enjoying it throughout. So.
I think the highlight of this really was just how into it the young, talented cast was.
Yes.
I mean, everybody in here, if you watch television, is like a primary name from a TV show. Like everybody. Like the main character is Thaisa Farmiga, Vera Farmiga's sister, who's on all the American Horror Story seasons.
And then one of the guys is from Silicon Valley.
Yeah, one of the guys is one of the leads from The Hunger Games.
And another guy is from Workaholics, who's an actor I don't particularly like, but...
I thought he did a good job for what he was. I mean, if you don't like his personality, character-wise, he is kind of the same character always.
He really is, and I think my problem with him in this movie is he's the douchebag jock in the 80s movie.
Yes.
But the problem is he's not 80s douchey. And I know that's...
He's not fit either. He's
no,
not chunky.
No, he's not... Well, like, his demeanor is very post-2000s, post-millennial douchebag. It's not at all the way the guys in the 80s, like Billy Zabka, were douchebags, you know? It's just... It doesn't... For me, it doesn't gel, and it...
know, without even having to think about it, the name of this completely obscure...
Billy Zabka from Karate Kid. He's the epitome of 80s douchebags.
That's true. He is king douchebag of the 80s.
He needed to be blonde, I think. You know.
Yes! At the very least.
I want to believe that he's a really nice guy in real life.
I'm sure he is.
I mean, like, the guy who played the bully in the Back to the Future films.
Oh, Thomas F. Wilson.
That guy's funny as shit in real life.
He's hilarious.
Yeah.
Really cool. But anyway...
And he's branded for life as a douchebag. It's like the guy from Ghostbusters. He cannot live that line down where it's like... It's true. This man has no...
Well, he was also the douchebag in Die Hard. So in the 80s, like, that's how that guy made his money.
Yeah.
Is he just kept playing douchebags in movies.
And they want to, in this film, like... create them. They're in a honey trap of a sort. Like,
yeah.
This is so cool.
Yeah.
We're inside the movie. Oh, wait. No, this actually is really lame that we're in the movie.
Right, exactly.
A lot of the jokes that really work are the ones that... they're going so deep into the trappings of the genre that you don't understand what's happening at first.
Mm-hmm.
Like, seeing it as if you were in it. Like, when they go into a flashback is
right.
One of the funniest sequences.
Yeah.
Pretty hilarious. And that's the thing is, like, I like that the guy understands the genre. Because too often you have these movies that are, like, going for this... meta angle, they end up somewhere south of Precious instead because they don't quite understand the thing that they're lampooning. This guy understands it from start to finish, and I really appreciated that about it.
That being said, this film does do the smart thing of trying to give it a heart, the relationship between
yes.
Carol and her mom, who doesn't know she's her mom or that she's dead, and it works for a while.
I agree. But
and then it falls on its face.
Towards the end, it just gets so Precious.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
And she becomes so almost like, oh yeah, I remember I'm your mom. And I'm like, well,
see, I didn't have that issue at all. I thought that relationship, it worked for me throughout, and I really, I'm not a big Malin Ackerman fan.
No, I'm not either.
And I thought she did a really good job in this movie, and I thought that connection was so sweet, and, you know, and I'm like a heartless old curmudgeon.
That's true, I can back him up.
And I still was like, oh, this is really sweet. This is like giving me all the feels.
All the feels.
I had none of the feels.
None of the feels for Casey.
Like, I was like, eh. I was actually getting a seizure at that point because it was just flashes of bright lightning every 2 seconds, like flash.
Yes!
Well,
and I was like, no.
Like, they were going with cheap effects from the 80s with this crazy lightning storm, and it was mm-hmm. so intentionally fake, but they did it so much that it was like, okay, stop it.
Yeah.
See?
I couldn't watch the screen. I looked down.
And I thought those effects worked okay, but there were a couple of moments in the movie that I was like, obviously you guys don't have a huge budget. Why are you doing big effects? Like, the car crash at the beginning, the car doesn't just crash. It, like, crashes and rolls 5 times, and it looks terrible. And I'm like, if you know you don't have the budget for big CGI, don't make the car roll, like, 20 times before it stops, you know?
They could have done the car crash cut to black like they do in some of the other indie films, you know?
So exactly.
We get it.
We understand. We don't need to see Malin Ackerman, like, roll over like she's in a rock tumbler for 10 minutes.
I don't know. I always thought I wanted to see that.
Well, after Watchmen, I think we all wanted to see that.
I think they actually might have needed it because it started the movie off because we need to know that it's going to get a little crazy and a little weird, and the car crash does that. Matter of fact, when they pull back and, like, show the car going down the road, it's like, oh, you're realizing that we're going to have a couple weird effects coming up. It lays the groundwork of that, so.
Maybe. I thought they were going to introduce that Sharktopus was going to show up and eat the car.
I wouldn't have been against that.
No, it would have been okay.
I will say, the missed opportunity of all missed opportunities was not having Malin Ackerman be revealed at the end as the killer and she's actually got a penis.
You really do like the transvestite killer.
Freeze frame on her with the crazy face from Sleepaway Camp. I'm just saying.
You're all about Angela. Chicks with dicks even in your horror appreciation. Wow.
One
thing. No, sure it is. Yeah, no, I get it.
It's just a 4chan trap movie. You know, that's all.
More like 4tran.
Oh.
Hey-o.
Isn't there actually a 4chan site?
I don't know. I don't go to 4chan.
I think 4chan is the 4tran site. I think that's how it works.
Why the hell would I go to 4chan? Anyway, next movie we saw.
Was
The Boy.
I wasn't there for that one, so I'm going to bow out and get some alcohol.
Right. Fair enough.
Give me a drink,
if
you will. Okay. Whiskey and seven.
What?
Seven.
Whiskey and seven. He wants seven whiskeys. That's what Chris just ordered.
Although if he brings back seven whiskeys,
that'd be fine.
I'll just work my way through.
We'd be okay with that. Well, The Boy is an interesting, very quiet, very introspective film about a young kid living with his father at this out-of-the-way hotel on a road that clearly very few people drive anymore.
Pretty much just the brothers from Supernatural, everyone.
Yes. It has a very Bates Motel feel in that it's so out of the way, so remote in the mountains that you get very few visitors there.
This makes Bates Motel look like the Holiday Inn in downtown.
Kind of does. The Ritz-Carlton. So this is a story about a young boy who is, he's lost his mother. His mother ran off with a trucker who came to the motel that his father runs, and they skipped off to Florida. So now his every dream is to somehow raise enough money to get a bus ticket to go to Florida and be with her. And as a result, he becomes fascinated, and then this sounds like a strange jump, he becomes fascinated with death because his father pays him 50 cents for every piece of roadkill that he cleans up off the highway.
It seems more or less to give him something to do.
Yeah.
Because there is nothing to do.
There's a whole lot of nothing out there.
There's like a drain pipe. That's about
it. Yay, drain pipe! Yeah. Let's have fun.
As a kid, I love drain pipes, so I understand.
That explains so much.
Well, you clearly didn't have any good drain pipes.
I clearly wasn't touched by uncles, but that's fine. What? What's going on here?
My uncle said he would not follow me into the drain pipe. Yeah. I was all upset because I felt like he didn't really love me.
I was upset when my uncle touched other kids because I'm not a fan of polyamory.
Reviewing happiness?
What's happening? So basically,
we're reviewing what's happening.
Dynamite. What happens through the course of the story is you have, he decides that the best way for him to continue to make money is to start to lure animals onto the highway so that they get hit by cars. So you can already kind of see the seeds of sociopathic behavior. And wouldn't you know it, he lures a deer onto the road and a car hits the deer, and the car was driven by Rainn Wilson. So Rainn Wilson ends up having to stay at the motel. There's some shady things about his past, and the story kind of unfolds from there.
What you're watching here could be dismissed as simply a origin story for any given franchise serial killer, and I think that's oversimplifying what they're
doing
here. I mean, a lesser director, I think, would have made that film, but this is really an art film.
Very much so.
That is still the origin of any given serial killer.
It is an origin story, but that's not all. To me, like, what I liked about this movie is that it was conventional in that it sold you very early on the type of movie that it is, but it was unconventional in the fact that once it established with you exactly what type of movie it was, it made choices that were intentionally counter to what you've seen in those movies 100 times over.
I do agree with that. I think that,
band's about to play.
Take a break and find another.
Maybe we should take a break. But quickly, your thoughts on the board?
I thought that it's a very beautiful looking movie that's intentionally slowly paced, a very strong young male lead in it.
Would you say it's a slow burn?
Yes, I kind of would. I do think ultimately this is a movie that's going to mainly interest horror fans.
Totally.
I mean, this is not for the art house crowd it thinks it's for. It's for people who like. People who can watch horror movies from Italy in the 80s and all.
True. Yeah. Or people who really like, like Hannibal or Bates Motel. People who like kind of drawn out, very introspective, very deeply pensive type stories about maniacs.
I like that this kid, it's like a lesser film would have just shown, hey, he loves to return animals.
Yeah.
And it's not like he goes, this will be fun. No, in fact, he's kind of resistant against the idea of hurting them initially, but like, when it's like, oh, but I get a benefit from it, he doesn't
right.
even think twice about it.
There's a pragmatic reason for why he's doing it that you actually relate to.
Watch the things that make him the man he will eventually become, you know, after the movie's over, like, go in a very organic form from one to the next.
Right.
I really like that about this.
I agree.
That being said, I didn't think I was as surprised by the movie's decisions as you were at the time. I still felt like I saw a lot of it coming. And I also felt like we had a big disagreement about relationship with the father.
Oh, absolutely.
I really thought that, like, whereas I wouldn't say the father is completely culpable for this kid being who he is, the father and son are, the father is as deeply down as he is as I can do. Who wouldn't be?
At that hotel, yeah, I would say that, but I'm in a major city and I drink every day, so, you know.
Left the kid completely to his own devices, and even though he tries kind of lamely to connect with this kid, you know, I mean, hell, it must be difficult to connect with this kid. I mean, you're born a sociopath.
Yeah. Well, and I really do think, and I'm not trying to be judgmental at all, but I really do think that a lot of the perspective of, you know, judgment on this father and how he's raising his son is coming from the fact that I think we had very happy, maybe not happy childhoods, but good relationships with our fathers. So it's like, and we weren't in a situation where we were stranded in the middle of nowhere, where literally we were the entire workforce for a failing business that if it went under, the family went under. So, I mean, I think it's, and it, plus, the thing about this movie is it takes place in the late 80s. And I think there's a lot of, perspective difference between, you know, the way that we turned out, oddly enough, and the situation that these people find themselves in. So for me, I could totally put aside, like, yeah, maybe the father should have done more, but at the same time, it's like, this is a really difficult situation for all of them, and I don't know how anybody would handle that. And frankly, I felt a real love between the father and son. In fact, there's a great scene where it's the kid's birthday, and the dad has made this awful-looking cake. It's clear that he can't bake. It's not his forte, but he still made the effort to try and, you know, do something nice for the kid's birthday. And so, like, little moments like that, I was like, I don't think I buy into the idea that he's a neglectful father or that he's not doing enough. I think it's just the situation they're trapped in.
See, I think it's really we're taking separate scenes out of it and looking at them specifically as an example of these. And for me, I look at that as, like, of course he loves his kid. He just doesn't know how to be a father anymore. He's too depressed. And that was kind of a lame attempt to try and connect with the kid when it's too late.
See, I don't agree with that. But again, this is where an interesting discussion is fostered by the movie.
That being said, I got nine very close, and by the time I was nine, I had already taken down 40, 50 teenagers, so...
Yeah, you're kind of a maniac. I wasn't going to say anything.
It's funny in the movie, the moment they announce, hey, the prom is going to be taking over this hotel for the weekend, so just don't mess with them. I was like, hooray! I know where this is going.
Absolutely. Yeah, this to me is like, if you've ever seen Psycho 4, which you don't have to because it's Psycho 4.
I liked
it. It was directed by Mick Garrison. It was an attempt to kind of tell Norman Bates' origins about what it was like for him to grow up. I mean, it's basically the TV show Bates Motel, except that it's, you know, one movie.
Yeah.
And this felt to me like a much artier, much more interesting, much more well-crafted version of that. And, like, the ending I thought was so powerful, and I was really, really engaged and intrigued by the things that they were doing at the end. I honestly, to tell you the truth, I think I kind of loved this movie.
The ending was very effective. It really reminded you of the beginning of Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
No question that's right there, and I think very intentional.
Yeah.
Young Michael Myers, as they pull the mask off him, and he's standing there, like, with a 1,000-yard stare.
Yeah.
Yes, very much intentional in there. So I was like, I just know right now Brian Salisbury looks like.
I mean, it hit on so many of my touchstones, but at the same time, I just think it's a very well done movie. I love David Morse. I don't think that guy gets enough credit. He's an amazing actor. And then, of course, Rainn Wilson. This was the first time I've seen Rainn Wilson in something, you know, other than maybe Super, that I've been like, oh, wow, I'm impressed by your ability as an actor. Not just by your presence on screen, but by your actual ability as an actor.
The way they use him in the script as, in a way, a red herring character.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of lead you in a way that you think this movie might be going, when in truth they're just trying to cover up the way it's actually going.
That he's a red herring, and he's the match on the powder keg. I love that character for that. I really do.
Anyway, that was the boy.
That was the boy.
We both liked it, but you liked it a lot more. No.
I think that's exactly where we ended up. Yeah.
And next,
Death Guzzle. This was the ultimate midnight movie, I feel, for South by Southwest. They really, like, this is perfect for that time slot. This is from New Zealand, and this is, you know, there's a subgenre of horror, especially in the late 80s, metal horror, things like Black Roses, things like Trick or Treat, things like Demons. Right, with Gene Simmons, these are movies like this entire subgenre exists. It's a very niche thing, and this is kind of a throwback to that. Although it's really more of a throwback to the early days of Sam Raimi and Peter Jackson. But still, the story revolves around a young metalhead whose mother goes on a meth binge, and as they say in the beginning of the movie, tries to blow a Santa Claus in the middle of a crowded mall. So she gets shipped off to an asylum, and the son is shipped off to live with his aunt and uncle, who are born-again Christians.
They don't like him, and their son, who is like every asshole frat guy in any given movie.
He was way more of an 80s douchebag than the 80s douchebag in the 80s douchebag movie.
No motivation for him to be a dick. He's just a dick for dick's sake.
Yes, which was a very 80s thing.
But this whole movie is dealing with the highly exaggerated absurd.
Yes.
Everybody in it, there's no time that you feel they're trying to tell a story about real people.
Yeah.
If you go into it that way, you failed this city.
This is...
This,
Yeah, you failed this. I like that. This is the sort of, like, grand guignol splatter flick that, like, literally put people like Sam Raimi and Peter Jackson on the map. And, in fact, throughout this entire movie, there are just wholesale ripoffs. You know, it runs from homage to wholesale ripoff.
That's where my dividing line was for this movie.
Yeah.
There's a lot of gore in this. It is completely a love letter to Sam Raimi and Peter Jackson.
At one point, one of the characters is wearing a Bad Taste t-shirt.
And yet, when it wants to do things that are supposed to be homage, they're ripping off entire sequences.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
And I'm
like, you're going past homage now and just hoping nobody's seen these movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. But on the other hand, like, I really, here's the thing that bothers me about this movie is, like, I like gore, but when it gets to, like, I'm actually not a huge fan of early Peter Jackson. Like, I appreciate it, I respect it, but, like,
see, I love Dead Alive, I love Genesis. That's but
when your violence gets so soupy, like, it just, to me, it's just like, it takes me out of it.
I don't think Casey liked the slapstick aspect.
For my own personal reasons, when you see real gore, when you see fake gore, it does weird things. But
when you see Al Gore,
yeah, all those types of things. So that, for me, I get a little bit more squeamish than I was when I was younger. But there was some stuff in there that was like really genuine. Like the characters, I really loved them.
I agree.
I thought the main character guy was really like, he had a heart, and the girl, I actually liked the relationship.
Very much so.
It's like, and then when there was this weird betrayal thing going on, I felt bad. It's like, oh, interesting. I actually feel for somebody on screen in this weird splatter fest.
That's true. That's the thing. It's like, as much as the splatter kind of took me out of it, the story and the comedy worked so well for me because these characters were so likable, because the relationship between the unpopular metalhead and the popular girl, not only did it work, but there was no weird acknowledgement of like, oh, we're from different social spheres, so we shouldn't hang out. It was just like, no, I like you. I like you too. And it was like, that was it. And you don't see that. Like, usually they have to, like, do this whole dance of, like, social hierarchy. And it's like, no, I like you. I like you. Cool. We're going to hang out. Here's some metal. You should listen to it. Oh, I really like you, too.
I thought that was actually my favorite aspect of the whole film, was that relationship between them where, you know, in any other girl, it would have been a long lead-up to her eventually, you know, being, you know, towing, you know, tagging along with the hero reluctantly and eventually saying he's awesome. Here, it's like early on, before anything really happens, she's like, I've never really admitted this to myself, but I think I like the bad boys.
Well, and then that's the other thing, too, is there's never that stupid scene where it's like, she likes him, but she has to go along with the crowd, so she's mean. You know what I mean? Like, you see that in...
from the beginning. She's like, no, I'm going to like him. I'm going to go for him.
Exactly. And I think it works so well. And it was kind of throwing me off, though, that the two leads look like Heath Ledger and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Like, really, like, in fact, the like...
The main guy kind of looked like Glenn Danzig to me. The young Glenn Danzig looked like a lot.
I could see that as well.
I think that was probably very intentional.
And like, the main, like, kind of wild card character, you cannot tell me that he doesn't look exactly like Heath Ledger in 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah, it was
kind of freaking me out a little bit. And plus the fact that the accent, I was like, that's what Heath Ledger sounds like in real life, or sounded like
it. It would have been great if he had gone out in front of her and, like, on the football field and started singing, like, a black metal song.
Louis Armstrong, everybody.
Or any given guy who sings in a black metal band in Sweden.
There you go.
I will say this, though. I didn't like the comedy quite as much as you did. It kind of points about like if Adam Sandler made a slapstick comedy.
Ooh, that's harsh. That's harsh.
Like, something like 20 scenes where they kill a zombie with a dildo or a dick of some sort, or chop off a dick, or a dick goes flying. And it's like, okay, we get it. You think dicks are funny.
Yeah, I don't know. I was, this is weird to say, I was okay with the ratio of dick trauma in this movie. I've never had to say that before on a review.
Your Honor, I think that's all the evidence we need now, having listened to this recording, that Ryan Salisbury is the dick chop killer.
Yeah, I am the dick chop killer. It's me and the slap chop guy. But yeah, I what I liked about it is it achieved kind of that weird, like Scott Pilgrim, Shaun of the Dead, so I guess Edgar Wright level of meta, where it was like, at one point, my favorite scene of this type of comedy in the movie is that they're going around the room trying to figure out the name of the band, and one of the guys says, we're called Deathgasm, all capital letters, and then they pan over to one of the other guys that's like, ooh, or we could call ourselves, and you literally see the guy grab the camera, pull it back to him, and go, no, I said we're calling it Deathgasm. I thought there's moments like that throughout the whole movie that really worked for me.
Oh, I agree. I think this is scattered, really brilliant comedy moments.
its worst, wants so badly to be the films it's influenced by that it forgets it's not just making a remake of them.
True.
And I think that not all the gimmick lies. Some of it's just kind of dawn-inducing and very frat boy humor. Like, okay, you say so. I do like that this is really and truly a metal film.
What's totally.
Honestly, one of the first 100% metalhead movies I've ever seen. Like, yeah. This is guys going around fighting zombies with the King Diamond makeup on and the full deal, you know? Like, they love metal.
Chris, it's corpse paint. It's called corpse paint.
Well, King Diamond was the first guy.
No, I know that. I'm saying what they said in the movie. It's called a callback.
The one thing I think that was missing that I wanted to see was them use more of their metal in their killing. Like, I wanted them to be, like, a band that is a killer. And they use their instruments, and they use their sound, and what do they find ways, instead of just, like, using the traditional things that we've seen in every other, like, zombie horror film.
Yeah, no, that would have been cool.
It's getting old, you know?
I would have dug that.
I'm not trying to say anything bad about this movie, but Tenacious D are the best metal fighting guys.
All right, Kanye. But, no, I enjoyed this movie, and I think it's interesting. The three movies that we've seen so far all had amazing soundtracks.
They did.
How, you know what I mean? Like, all the three movies, I was thinking about this today, I was like, you know.
I love the soundtrack for the first movie.
Final Girls, yeah. It had a great score, and it also had great 80s music dropped in. It really, and like, I will never look at Kim Carnes' Betty Davis eyes the same way again.
Jokes that works in there is that like, the characters are the pretty immersed in the theater once the other characters are there, the guests they are, the characters they can hear the
That's hilarious.
When the songs get dropped into the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Aware of something going on. And it's very sort of Scream taken to the next level.
And the weird Adderall-infused striptease to Cherry Pie. Oh, my God.
Best moment of the film right there.
It was hilarious.
But she takes a huge amount of Adderall and talks to one of the other girls. And it's funniest and totally improv.
Totally, apparently improv.
Hyper exaggerated.
Hyper indeed.
High Fred Bull induced, apparently.
Yeah. No. I think it's been an interesting collection of films. We've seen two horror comedies and one very like weird introspective type horror film, or a burgeoning horror film even. So it's been an interesting couple of days.
It has been. And I expect many more interesting days that we have to record because otherwise I won't remember because of the
so much booze. Thanks for joining us, Casey.
Oh, of course. It's fun to always talk about movies.
Any final words?
Let's see the next film.
Let's do it.
Check out We're Alive. Do it or I'll kill you.